It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Otto Warmbier has just passed away. He spent a year and a half in North Korea. A lot of bad things happened, but at least we got him home to be with his parents. We were so happy to see him, even though he was in very tough condition, but he just passed away a little while ago. It's a brutal regime, and we'll be able to handle it.
All right, that was President Trump making the very brief announcement while he was in the middle of a meeting with some techie leaders at the White House about the death of Otto Warmbier, you know, 22 years old. 22 years old. He's been in the news, you know that. He was in North Korea on this Young Pioneer Tour, which they had no business sending kids there. I could have told them that if they'd asked me. And so Otto, you could remember the video, they show him taking a poster down in a hallway, as he seems to be taking a poster down. They charged him with a capital offense and 15 years in prison. Kristen Fisher actually has a very good report on this. And let's let Kristen tell the story. Here it is.
James, this awful announcement came straight from Otto's family. They say he died around 2:20 this afternoon, surrounded by his family. He'd been in a state of unresponsive wakefulness ever since he was brought back from North Korea last week. His family says, quote, when Otto returned to Cincinnati late on June 13th, he was unable to speak, unable to see, and unable to react to verbal commands. He looked very uncomfortable, almost anguished. Although we would never hear his voice again, within a day, the countenance of his face changed. He was at peace. He was home, and we believe he could sense that. Well, as for his captors, the North Koreans, today his family said this, quote, unfortunately, the awful, torturous mistreatment our son received at the hands of the North Koreans ensured that no other outcome was possible beyond the sad one that we experienced today. Now, when Otto arrived back in the U.S., his doctors said that he'd suffered severe brain damage, likely due to lack of oxygen, but it wasn't clear exactly what caused it. Otto had spent nearly a year and a half imprisoned in North Korea. He'd been sentenced to 15 years hard labor for, according to the North Koreans, stealing a propaganda poster.
Oh, that's the first part of Kristen's report. Let me just say that in the North Korean gulags, this is business as usual for North Koreans, especially Christians. I've heard stories, unbelievable stories, and I'm going to cover this actually in depth. I'm going to host for Washington Watch for Tony Perkins on Thursday night, and Suzanne Schulte will join me. And we're going to talk about what goes on behind the scenes in North Korea, because I just don't think, I remember when I first saw Otto's picture in his suit all dressed up, and I thought, this kid has no idea. He's taking a poster down. This is really Exhibit A of the ignorance, and I don't mean that in any disrespect to him, but the lack of knowledge imparted to our children in public school and higher education, having absolutely no idea, which it's public knowledge, the brutality in North Korea, thinking as a kid that he could take down a poster and do an antic in this country, not having any idea what he was up against and how he was endangering his own life, just clueless. And it cost him his death. Let's listen to the second part of Kristen Fisher's story.
The world watched his tearful confession. He was just 21 at the time, and he was wearing a jacket that made it home to the U.S. with him. Here's his father speaking to reporters last week.
I'm able to wear the jacket that he wore when he gave his confession. I'm not confessing, I'm speaking, but Otto, I love you, and I'm so crazy about you, and I'm so glad you're home. You are such a great guy.
Now, at that press conference, Otto's father also praised President Trump for the role that his administration played in bringing his son home. And just moments ago, the president released a statement about Otto's passing. He offers his deepest condolences to the family. And then he said this, quote, "Otto's fate deepens my administration's determination to prevent such tragedies from befalling innocent people at the hands of regimes that do not respect the rule of law or basic human decency. The United States once again condemns the brutality of the North Korean regime as we mourn its latest victim."
All right. And so, and you have to say, coming on the heels of that, it has to be said that Otto was taken into custody under the Obama administration and under John Kerry heading the State Department, and they did nothing. And so, you know, these kinds of dangerous leftist policies have consequences. And the consequences are often death. And certainly we saw that stateside last week in the shooting of Steve Scalise. Of course, thank God he's alive, still undergoing surgeries. I think he had another one yesterday. But these things have real consequences. And as a matter of fact, I told you yesterday, I spent a little bit of time talking about Bernie Sanders. You know, we never encourage violence. We just never encourage it. But on his Facebook page and on his Twitter account, it's something like, "The revolution is underway. The revolution has begun." And I reminded you that Bernie Sanders spent his honeymoon in walled-off Moscow. None of us traveled to Moscow in those days because it was the center of the most vile kinds of communism. And Bernie Sanders knew that. That's where he wanted to spend his honeymoon. And let me just say that under that regime started by Stalin, millions of Russians, millions were murdered, slaughtered. In that revolution, Bernie Sanders knows what he's saying when he says revolution and encourages revolution. And when he says he does, "Oh, no, we don't mean for any killing," that's a lie. It has to be a lie. It is not true. He knows what he's talking about. And by the way, he and his little princess, the Cherokee princess, whatever her name is, Elizabeth Warren, did a Facebook Live appearance just, I believe, yesterday, and called for unprecedented political revolution. Of course, he doesn't mean, you know, he just means the nice variety revolution, not the bloody kind, just the nice kind. But that's what they say. He told them to go big. He accused the Republicans of harming millions of people. Elizabeth Warren went further. She said, thinks the Republicans won't pay any price politically for the harm they inflicted upon millions of people across the country. It's cynical. They're talking about health care. So act in unprecedented ways. Fight back in every way you can, says Bernie Sanders. But of course, the revolution doesn't really mean blood. Oh, it did in Russia when he was so enamored of communism, and what the revolution caused was the death of millions of Russians, so Russia's own people, not to mention the murdering that they did outside of the regime and how they took over Eastern Europe. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, listen, that's not him. He has a different thing in mind, I'm sure. So this James Hodgkinson, who was the shooter, we're learning more about him, who shot Steve Scalise and had a list in his pocket, a lot of Freedom Caucus members. I think they were all Freedom Caucus members that he wanted to kill. We're learning more about him. There's a really sad article, the Chicago Tribune, about the fact that he and his wife were foster parents, and two of the kids that were under their care ended up dying, one of a drug overdose, but it goes back and reads transcripts where she talks about how he abused her and how horrible things were and how they finally had to take her out of the home. And a second girl that lived in that home, 17-year-old Wanda Ashley Stock, drove down a lonely rural road and doused herself with gasoline and set herself on fire. It's a horrible story. It sounds like James Hodgkinson had a terrible history, but that doesn't mean he's mentally ill. I think people, I don't know, you know, you could discuss that till the cows come home. Are people, you know, evil? I remember once I was interviewing the detectives in the mass murderer in Chicago, the guy who dressed like a clown. I covered that very, very closely. And I had the detectives in my studio the day he was executed. And I asked them one by one, "Do you think he was evil or was he just a criminal?" And each of them said, there were three of them, the head of the, was Lieutenant Kowalski, I remember, Kozinsak, who I got in to know very well. He was the one who headed the investigation. And they one by one, they said he was evil. They spent time with him. He was evil. He was wicked. And so I think the same thing may apply to this shooter. He was evil. He was wicked. And he would have done a lot worse if the police had not shot him last week in Alexandria. All right, there's a big event today in Georgia's 6th District. It's a race between a gentleman named John Ossoff and a Republican named Karen Handel. Now, here's the story as far as I can understand it. John Ossoff, from my understanding, is a complete leftist who is acting as though he's a conservative. He's a filmmaker. He's got the endorsements of, I'll just tell you who's come out to endorse him, and that should speak volumes. It's Samuel L. Jackson, Chelsea Handler, George Takei, Alyssa Milano, all of them are working, and many more, as a matter of fact. Because and then Ossoff, of course, is sounding, this is what the Republican establishment does. I know this drill very well. They go into a conservative district, they run their candidate, they give their candidate talking points as though he's pro-life, as though he cares about immigration, and then when he gets to Washington, they do just the opposite. Well, that's what they're doing with it. They learn quickly. This is what they're doing, I think, with John Ossoff. Karen Handel, my understanding, is not a strong candidate in terms of her persona, and that's made the race more complicated. I don't even know where she is on policies, but here's the deal. Some would say there's a lot more at stake here than the Democrats, of course, are saying this is a litmus test for Donald Trump. And the Republicans, and of course, the Republicans have to defend this seat because the Democrats very clearly want to take back the House of Representatives so that they can impeach the president. So it's just pretty clear and pretty obvious. They've already had a record turnout in terms of their voting ahead of time. And there's a PAC that's running an ad on this race that's pretty stunning. It's called Principal PAC. Let's listen to this ad.
Now the unhinged left is endorsing and applauding shooting Republicans. When will it stop? It won't if John Ossoff wins on Tuesday, because the same unhinged leftists cheering last week's shooting are all backing John Ossoff. And if he wins, they win. Stop them. Stop them now. Stop John Ossoff. Stop Nancy Pelosi. Vote Karen Handel for Congress. Vote Principled Leadership Project PAC. Paid for this ad and is solely responsible for its content.
Okay, well, that's the ad running down in Georgia 6th. And, I think they've spent $50 million on this race. That's the highest amount spent in any congressional race ever. And, of course, a lot of the money has come, John Ossoff's money. He's raised money far in excess of Karen Handel. And it is coming from the left. It's just flooding in because they want to make it. They want to make it appear. And there may be some truth to this, that Donald Trump is unpopular, that there's a mass wave against him, and that John Ossoff's upset. By the way, this seat was held by Newt Gingrich. He took it in 1978. That's the first time. That's when the South sort of started turning red. And the Republicans have held that seat ever since. So it's a significant seat in terms of its symbolism. And the Democrats want to demonstrate not only is Donald Trump unpopular, everyone hates him, but they also want to take that seat because they want to impeach him. It's actually very simple. John Ossoff is much more charismatic than Karen Handel, and so they've managed to get, I think it's in the multiple hundred thousands of pre-votes, which is amazing in a congressional district. So I don't really know what to say about that. The polls are showing that John Ossoff is ahead. Of course, the polls are not trustworthy. They really never are. We know that they're used to sort of mold people's minds. So you have to be careful. But for those of you in Georgia, you might want to get out and vote today at 6th District, or talk to your friends, call your friends who live in that district, and you might want to encourage them that this is a different kind of election. And every little increment matters. Every race matters. The Democrats understand that, and I think the Republicans also do. This is Sandy. Oh, by the way, when we return, the former commander of the Pacific Fleet will join us to talk about what happened to the USS Fitzgerald. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. There's no end to our quest for wanting more things and experiences and accomplishments. But what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? The joy for all those things is fleeting at best as their glow gives way to wanting more of those things. There's nothing this world has to offer that can fill the God-shaped void in our lives that only He can fill. Only then can you be truly satisfied, knowing you're living in His love and on your way to heaven. The next step is where all the fun begins as you allow God's love to flow through you to everyone around you. This is your purpose. You were created to be an extender of His love, to draw all men unto Him. This is the ultimate form of fulfillment. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Over the weekend, several conservative protesters disrupted the New York City production of Julius Caesar, the one where the lead character is depicted as Donald Trump. The scene where the President Trump-like character is assassinated is graphic and bloody, worthy of a Quentin Tarantino movie, made even more offensive by the audience's cheering and applause. All that to say, the production staged in Central Park is grossly offensive, and the actors involved should be ashamed.
Nevertheless... Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
How a top-of-the-line U.S. Navy warship could be T-boned by a slower, less maneuverable container ship remains inexplicable. But the result is indisputable. Seven American sailors dead and the USS Fitzgerald limping into port. Vice Admiral Joseph O'Coyne, commander of the 7th Fleet, said the crew had to fight to keep the ship afloat.
The damage is mostly underneath the waterline, and it's a large gash near the keel of the ship.
The Japanese Coast Guard said the ACX Crystal plowed into the Fitzgerald at 1:30 in the morning local time, as the Philippine flag vessel was headed from Nagoya to offload cargo in Tokyo Bay. A website that tracks commercial vessels shows the Crystal making a sharp change of course at exactly that time, as if it had run into something and was coming about to see what it was. The container ship had a crew of only 20 and may well have been operating on autopilot. The Fitzgerald and its crew of 300 was outbound. Its bridge watch would have included an officer of the deck, radar operators, and lookouts. They should have been able to see the Crystal coming from at least 10 miles away. That would leave plenty of time to alter course and to alert the captain. But Commander Bryce Benson was still in his cabin when the Crystal struck.
His cabin was destroyed. He's lucky to be alive.
An investigation will determine who made what mistakes, but in the U.S. Navy, the captain is held responsible for everything that happens aboard his ship.
All right, that was a CBS report of that collision that happened, collision. We'll see. That happened Saturday afternoon at sort of a disputable time. The time is being disputed by an hour. There was an hour delay in reporting the incident. Again, you heard in that description, it was the Crystal, a merchant cargo ship registered at the Philippines. that ran broadside the USS Fitzgerald, which is a U.S. Navy destroyer. Seven sailors were killed in that incident. And there, I noticed last night, I actually expected there would be a very full report on this last night, but there wasn't. And there are some indications that this is not, something's not right here. Well, I don't know if it is or not, but I have asked our next guest to join us because he would have a better understanding of this than just about certainly anyone that I know. And his name is Admiral James Ace Lyons, Jr. He was a former officer with the U.S. Navy for 36 years and served as the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. He served in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. He knows all about China, Japan, and the Pacific Rim countries. And no one would probably understand what to look for or, you know, what might have gone wrong with this than Admiral Lyons. Thank you, sir, for joining us this morning.
Nice to be with you, Sandy, and your listeners.
Yes. All right, sir. I just want to know, I just want to turn you loose. What do you think about what happened on Saturday? And do you have any concerns about it?
Well, I do have concerns about it, and certainly, our condolences go out to the families of the seven sailors that lost their lives, and that is first priority, and taking care of those families. But, you know, in this situation, I've been in several situations like this. You know, you present this as a crossing situation, and the ship to the right, to your right, and let's say a ship that's going from east to west versus the ship that's going from south to north. The ship on the right, let's say, always maintains course and speed, and the ship that's going from south to north is the burden ship, and that must take an evasion action. And nonetheless, regardless of what the normal crossing rules are, we've got a very powerful Navy ship. And what I don't understand is how it let itself get into the position where the collision could have occurred. You just get out of there and get out of the way. So this is troubling to me that more determined evasive action was not taken. And I can't, and in a situation like this, you know, you train your officer of the deck. Don't be afraid to call and wake me anytime of the night, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, it doesn't matter. You have to have the confidence in your officer of the deck when you have a situation developing that he will or she will, whoever the officer of the deck was, will call you and get you to the bridge and to unscramble what seems to be an unusual situation. Apparently, in this situation, that didn't occur. The captain was still in his cabin, and it almost cost him his life, as I understand it.
You know, I think the thing that is hard to understand, Admiral, of course, we don't know the sea like you do, and we don't know the vessels, so forgive the the inexact language that I might use here. But my understanding is that first of all, the destroyer, I'm assuming, is much more flexible, agile than a big tanker. And secondly, my understanding is that our destroyer could have heard, would have known that a big ship was coming close. They would have heard it and seen it, even if their technical equipment malfunctioned. What do you agree with that?
Well, they were tracking. You have your combatant, you have your full crew on the bridge, you have your full crew in the combat information center. You have all sorts of radar tracking, so forth and so on. You know exactly the surface picture all around you. So one of the disturbing facts that has come out that apparently just at the time of the collision, the container ship made a 180-degree U-turn. That is most unusual.
Why?
And I've got to question why that maneuver.
Why
would container ships and all these, you know, they set them on autopilot, and away they go. And for that, for a container ship that size, to make a 180-degree U-turn is most unusual. So this, to me, is very suspicious. Nonetheless, even if it did that, I got to say, I don't understand why the Fitzgerald just didn't take the evasive action necessary. It has all sorts of power to get out of an extremist situation like it was in.
So are you saying, all right, if indeed it's unusual to turn for the tanker, to turn 180 degrees, or at least attempt to do that, what would the inference be there? Worst case scenario.
I didn't hear that, Sandy. Say it again.
What would the inference be if that tanker did turn 180 degrees? What are you...
It's most unusual. It almost implies it was certainly there was a deliberate attempt to possibly ram the ship. I mean, that's one of the conclusions one has to draw.
Mm-hmm. Now, this ship was out of the Philippines.
The Philippine flagged, it's Japanese owned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it has a crew of only 20. And whether you have to wonder who was on the bridge of the container ship, because somebody had to be on that bridge. Somebody gave the orders to do a 180-degree turn. That just doesn't happen by itself. So you have to a deliberate attempt to ram the ship, and the next question is why. There's a lot of unanswered questions here. But again, I got a question why the Fitzgerald didn't take more evasive action. I don't know at this point. Certainly, it had the horsepower and the maneuverability to do that.
You know, another clue that's troubling, and maybe this isn't, do you think it's troubling that it was almost an hour before the collision was reported by the cargo ship?
Well, you know, in the flow of the night, whether it be 1:30 or 2:30 in the morning, there were all sorts of damage to the destroyer. And, of course, the first charge was checking on their people and trying to control the flooding, which, as I understand it, was very severe because a hole was punched into that berthing compartment, which is, well under the water line. So there was water just pouring into that ship, and that had to be brought under control. So the fact that a report was delayed is not that significant, as the first order of business is saving the ship.
There was another little interesting, there's an article in the American Thinker, and in the article it includes an email from a Navy mother whose son was on the ship, and this is what she, of course, you know, anyone can say anything, so I just have to say this is a mother, it's her report from her son, and this is what she says. My son is assigned to the USS Fitzgerald. I am unable to share his rank with you. The information is short and not so sweet. The implications are disturbing. The ship is registered in the Philippines. We do not know who the owner is. The container ship neither had its running lights or transponder on. That is an action taken willfully. Furthermore, for the container ship to strike with such accuracy is troublesome, given what some have done with cars in Europe. What a feather in the cap it would be to sink a U.S. Navy warship. Think on that. My son missed being washed out to sea by the blink of an eye. He was on his way to one of the berthing areas that was rammed. Yes, language is important. Rammed is the perfect word. And then she signs herself a loving and concerned Navy mother. What are your thoughts about what she has shared?
Well, you know, I think she's kind of said it all. Because I hadn't seen the thing that had no running lights, I did see one report where it had a transponder turned off, which is a violation in itself of the rules, and certainly no running lights. It certainly leads to the conclusion, one can conclude, that this was a deliberate ramming action by the container ship. But again, I got to come back on the other side. A destroyer can well get out of the way of any container ship. I just don't understand all of the elements that went on at that time that would have prevented. I see nothing that would have prevented the Fitzgerald from taking the necessary evasive action.
There's another part of this that I'm curious about. There's of course, people can say anything at this point, and so I'm just reporting to you what I've been reading. Yes. This is from the American Thinker article. It says the USS Fitzgerald, an anti-ballistic missile destroyer that was part of the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group, will no longer be ready to defend the carrier and other ships from missile attacks launched from North Korea. Should push come to shove in the current confrontation with the rogue regime on the threshold of the capability to attack New York, Los Angeles, and our power grid and nuclear missiles. So the point this writer is making is that ship is strategically placed there to protect us from any attack from North Korea. Do you agree that would make geographically that would maybe be the mission of that warship?
Well, you know, there are all sorts of speculations you can make at this point. Certainly, it sounds like this was a deliberate act. Again, I'm going to go back and say that the Fitzgerald has the capability to avoid letting itself get into the position it found itself. So that is troubling to me. The fact, the 180-degree U-turn, all of these are deliberate acts. These are not just happenstance. One of the conclusions one has to consider that this was a purposeful act to ram the Fitzgerald. Mm. Now, who the owners are, I saw one report, the ship is owned by a Japanese firm, Danichi, and it was operated by another Japanese firm. So the tie-in with North Korea and not be ruled out, but on the other hand, we don't see any direct tie-ins at this point.
Admiral Lyons, let's take a break here, and when we come back, I would love your thoughts on today's Navy, the size of our ship fleet, the social engineering that's taken place, its potential effect on the operation of our ships, on its personnel, because I know you have a lot of strong feelings about this. My guest is Admiral Ace Lyons. He's the former Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. And we'll return with him right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. What's Netflix banking on to reverse its recent slump, epitomized by the cancellations of several of its original productions? A blasphemous show about Jesus Christ as a teenager. The show's writer said, "We're developing a teen Jesus project for Netflix that's got some people nervous. It's like The Wonder Years, the 1980s coming-of-age drama, but with Jesus. There are all sorts of things where we cross lines. The disregard for Christ seems to know no bounds in Hollywood. You think they'd ever make a show about a teenage Muhammad?"
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
It's common sense. Don't touch a hot stove. And look both ways before crossing a busy street. It's common sense men don't belong in women's restrooms or changing areas. Target is ignoring common sense. Target continues their reckless and dangerous policy, allowing men into their women's restrooms and changing areas. Don't shop at Target. Protect your wives, daughters, and family. Now that's common sense. Sign the pledge to boycott Target. Visit AFA.net.
We at American Family Association are committed to making a difference and keeping you informed about the things you care about. We have already been greatly successful in bringing about change for the better by providing you with important information about things like current legislation and petitions that can affect your family. Text the word MYAFA to 41411 to get involved. Every week, you'll receive text messages with all the details you need to help make a difference for the kingdom. Text MYAFA, that's all one word, to 41411.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The latest instance of vehicular homicide in Britain is being rightly denounced as an act of terrorism. This time, though, instead of the perpetrators being Muslims, they were its intended victims. Indeed, the attack was evidently meant as an in-kind retaliation aimed at people associated with the Finsbury Park Mosque, one of the most notoriously jihadist institutions in the United Kingdom. If, as appears to be the case, Britain is inexorably sliding into a Sharia-induced insurgency, there may well be more episodes of this kind, or far worse, as vigilantes take matters into their own hands. That may be especially so to the extent that the government's response to this incident is more submission to the Islamists. It's way too early to suggest that this is what the opening engagements of a civil war look like, but that prospect can no longer be ignored. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It was 2:30 in the morning. The captain was in his stateroom. Most of the sailors were asleep when a 700-foot cargo ship, four times the size of that guided missile destroyer, slammed into that warship's starboard side. The sailors woke up instantly, their berthing spaces they could no longer recognize. They only had moments before seawater rushed in.
The damage is mostly underneath the waterline, and it's a large gash near the keel of the ship. And so the water flow was tremendous. And so there wasn't a lot of time in those spaces that were open to the sea.
Two berthing compartments flooded with over 100 sailors inside. The captain's stateroom was heavily damaged in the collision. The captain and two other sailors were airlifted off the ship. The executive officer took command. And Shannon, 16 hours after the collision, USS Fitzgerald returned to her home port of Yokosuka, Japan. It's not immediately clear how this collision could have been avoided.
All right, that was Lucas Tomlinson from Fox News, and this is Sandy Rios in the Morning. My guest is Admiral Ace Lyons, and we have been discussing what happened to the USS Fitzgerald. And if you just tuned in, basically the things that Admiral Lyons has brought to my attention is that merchant cargo ship did a 360-degree turn, which is very unusual, he says, in a collision like that. Also, it seems as though reports are saying that the cargo ship didn't have lights. But Admiral Lyons has emphasized several times that the USS Fitzgerald, as a smaller vessel, very agile, should have seen it, should have known, should have done something. It doesn't make any sense at all that they were rammed. Seven American sailors are now dead. And let me just tell you that, again, that Admiral Lyons is the former commander-in-chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. He is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, the U.S. Naval War College, and the U.S. National Defense University. He served as an officer with the U.S. Navy for 36 years. He was a former commander of a ship, and I could go on and on with all of his expertise, experience, and understanding. Admiral Lyons, I'm just a simple question. How would you compare today's Navy with the Navy that you were in command of during the years in which you served?
Well, it certainly has made some dramatic changes. And let me give you one example. We have roughly 270 ships in the entire Navy today. Well, that's basically the number of ships I had under my command as commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet. So that number itself would show you the dramatic change in the capabilities that we have today. But, of course, one of the more disturbing factors, and you mentioned it earlier, Sandy, in the last segment, is the social engineering that has been imposed on our wonderful military forces. All of those have done nothing to enhance our readiness and capabilities. It has destroyed unit integrity, cohesiveness, and the will to win. So you have to ask yourself, what was the main objective? Well, the only conclusion I can come up with is to further weaken our military capabilities. And what I don't understand, and it is today, why those social engineering mandates of the Obama administration were not canceled on day one. All this junk about transgender personnel. Transgender is a mental disorder. The senior psychologist from Johns Hopkins University, this is a mental disorder that needs treatment and understanding. It should never be forced on the military. And here we're going to be spending all sorts of scarce dollars to perform medical surgeries and so forth. This is nonsense stuff. I mean, anybody with any common sense who understands the military is not a democracy, but the military is a organization that's there to protect and defend the security of the United States.
You know, my first inclination of this social engineering started, at least in the Navy, with women being folded into the ships and really put in very close proximity even to the sailors. And then my next understanding of this, that there was like an epidemic of pregnancies on these ships.
Let me just tell you, my view on all of this is there are many viable roles for the women in the military. Combat is not one of them. I would not have, you know, you have to be brain dead to think you're going to put 18, 19-year-olds in close proximity aboard ship, and suddenly nothing is going to happen. Mother Nature takes over. I don't care who it is. And you're quite right, Sandy. There are all sorts of... When a woman doesn't want to go on a 6 or 9 month deployment, what does she do? She gets pregnant. Imagine that. And here she spent all sorts of time and training for her to perform an essential job on that ship, and he's gone. So all of this makes absolutely no sense to me.
Doesn't it? I think it's interesting, and maybe you know why this is. It seems to me, it's my impression, that the Navy is the one branch of the military that was targeted and where the in social engineering has had the greatest effect. In other words, it seems like the Navy caved to this much more easily than the Marines, for instance, who finally are caving. But ships were being named by like Harvey Milk, the gay mayor of San Francisco. Ships being named the names of famous gay people, that is so unlike the history of the Navy.
Destroy Navy tradition and your military effectiveness and the will to win. There's no other objective but that.
Would you say that? Do you think the Navy was targeted? I don't know, but do you think the Navy was targeted?
Let me just say, the former Secretary of the Navy almost should be brought up and tried for his dereliction of duty. He did more harm to the Navy than any single individual that I can name think of at the moment.
All right, so let me ask you this. We talk about, certainly now there's no barrier to gay sailors. That's like old hat. That's just the way it is. So male sailors are serving with homosexual sailors, and the same thing with lesbians. And so there's no distinction. So what, explain to us, you've been in the trenches, you've manned the ships. What effect is that having? Why is that a problem? Are they not able to fight?
Look, you're destroying. You're destroying. A ship is a fine-tuned machine, and that machine operates when your crew is totally focused on the operation and carrying out the requirements and the duties that it's been given. And you have to have a total focus. Every individual on that ship has an important role contributing to the success of the mission ship. It can't be, and that mission then gets distracted by these other elements that are brought into play by the social engineering mandate. It detracts from the objective of accomplishing your mission. I can't say it any plainer than that. As I said, it destroyed unit integrity, cohesiveness, and none of the social engineering contributes to improving the readiness and capabilities of our military forces.
You know, maybe we could.
Why it's being continued and pushed and hasn't been canceled at this point makes absolute sense to me. Yeah. I don't know who's advising President Trump, but I've got to say, I would have thought that the current Secretary of Defense would have made this a high priority, one of the issues he'd have taken on his first day in office.
My understanding is that under the Obama administration, that all of the hardliners, like someone like you, would not have been allowed to serve. That they were sort of moved on or retired, and that the people that were left at the Pentagon and other decision making places were very, very political and were willing to do whatever the president wanted them to do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's probably a fair assessment because, let me just say, and let me broaden this out a little bit. There are a number of, I just spoke at the at Memorial Day weekend for Rolling Thunder, for our POW/MIA group. And one of the things I discussed there was that our brave warriors didn't pay the ultimate price, the ultimate sacrifice, to have both our elected and appointed officials be able to conduct crimes in office and not be held accountable. And the same is said for our military leadership. When they signed off on, certainly these went along with the social engineering mandate, restricted rules of engagement that caused so many lives and permanent injuries to our wonderful military personnel, they need to be held accountable. It was dereliction of duty on their part, and they cannot be allowed to just walk away. So there has to be an accountability which is totally lacking today, and it is reflected in the criminalization of our government agencies. And if we're going to maintain ourselves as a democracy, this all has to be exposed and these people held accountable and face the American public.
Do you ever? I know that you serve on the board of directors, the advisory board for the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. So you do have some input. Are these things ever discussed, especially the social engineering, the reduction of forces? Are there active discussions on these things by those of you, like you, Admiral Lyons, who have long experience and understand the dangers that are being imposed? Are there active discussions right now with the people that are in leadership?
You know, what they tend to do is avoid some of the more difficult issues. And regretfully, probably not the extent of the discussions that need to be taken are being taken. I say that because it's more easy... to avoid the discussion than to actually take it head on.
You know, it's always been a mystery to me. I have to say, Admiral Lyons, men are, you know, I think God has made men. He has wired them uniquely. They are the warriors. Women will never be the warriors. Men are the warriors. They're fearless. They protect and defend their countries. But there are sometimes when men are particularly cowardly, and it seems to be about things like this. Less willing to step out sometimes than I think their sisters are.
With a country of over 320 million people population, and we've got something less than 0.5% of that population serving in our all-volunteer force, don't tell me we need women to round out our military capability. As I said before, there are many viable roles for women in the military. Combat is not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Admiral James Ace Lyons, Jr., it's a privilege to know you, and it's really an honor to have you join us this morning and give us your expertise. We thank you so much for your dedicated service to this country, and even now when you could quit and go play golf, here you are swinging away, doing your best to try to interject wisdom and to what's happening in order to protect our country. So thank you, sir, for that. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Okay, Sandy, and the best to you and your listeners.
Okay, very well.
We must prevail.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. All right, well, there it is. A voice, kind of a piece of our American history and wisdom that we need to adhere to and adhere. So Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.